In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss conjures, consequences, and contracts with the devil in Teeth in the Mist by Don Kurtigage.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, and authors that's full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda. And today, we're going to discuss Teeth in the Mist by Don Kurtigage. Standard disclaimer. If you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening and go read or listen to the book. Then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just love us so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Excellent. I'm really looking forward to this episode. Happy Halloween!
Hooray! Hooray! Happy Halloween!
Yay! Oh, this is going to be a good one. Should we just dive straight in because it's going to be too exciting?
Yes, it's so much. It's so much. So I found some background info and I thought it was really neat. In an interview with Aurora Dominguez from Frolic on June 1st of this year, 2019, they're talking about inspiration for the book. And Dawn says, "The novel developed out of my horrified fascination with the deal with the devil and the kind of person that makes such a deal. I had studied Dr. Faustus in university and I'm a fan of the classic film, Faust. But what interested me more than the man, Faust, was the women in his life and what such a grim bargain could and would mean for them. So I combined the two ideas and ended up with a novel more about the women affected by the unholy pact than the man who makes it in the first place."
Yes, 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 yes.
I know, it's so great. I love it because it's, you know, he's such a creepy character, and then to see the effect that he has on everyone's lives around him
for generations.
It's a very good idea.
Creepy old guy, don't you? Like, you know, withered and disgusting and
yeah,
and it's totally twisted.
And that's so good, and that's why we love it.
Yes. However, when you did the Halloween special and played the creepy snippet from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just wanted to listen to that book so badly. But we can't get them in Britain and it's really, really annoying. But you can now get Teeth in the Mist.
And that's so good.
It's exciting. It's really exciting because it's mint. So I was like, yes, we are totally doing this book. When you said, shall we do it? I was like, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I'll have to add some of the audio in from this one, too, because there's so many weird, echoing, creepy, evil laughs and, like, backward speak and so much just
the whispering. And yes. Do you know what I really enjoyed? The blowing out of the candle.
Yes! Oh, every chapter with Hermione Smith, like, you could hear her pen scratching in the background and she lights the candle and then blows it out at the end. Oh, so good. Such good quality audio.
Oh, her story. Right, we're jumping ahead.
Yes,
we're jumping ahead.
I will just say that I love everything that Don Kurtigage does. I love everything about her. And I pre-ordered this book as soon as I was able to. And I was definitely not disappointed. I actually own the book of this one, but I also had to listen to it on audio because her audiobooks are always fantastic and terrifying, as always.
Both mediums would creep you out in different ways.
Yes. And that's, it's so good. I love the way she puts her books together, too. There are weird, creepy things added into it. You need to read those books or listen to them. You need to do some magic.
I will. I have my list of audiobooks to listen to has somewhat exponentially increased to at least minimum 52 a year. Realistically, more when there's multiples.
Yes, when we accidentally have to discuss three in one week.
Yeah, which I'm not opposed to, and I'm quite loving.
That's enough. That's enough chit chat. Let's get into the summary. Ready? Go.
Okay. In a dark cave, a monk uncovers a scroll. Inside is the devil's tongue. When he reads it, the repercussions are felt for generations. The novel is told from three points of view and three time periods. To make it easier to take in, we're telling you their stories in their entirety. We'll begin with the diary entries of Hermione Smith in 1583.
Hermione married John Smith, a friend of her father. They're traveling to a place where John intends to build a great architectural engineering feat. The journey is long, but eventually they will reach what will become the Mill House.
Hermione questions her husband about building the water mill. It seems fruitless and dangerous. He beats her as his fever for the project is so great. She is pregnant. As the water wheel nears completion, Hermione hopes that when it is done, everything will be better. The growing baby feels foreign to her, and she begs for it to be baptized at its birth. As visions of the goat man grow, it is born blue and dead.
Hermione falls pregnant again. She dreams of her child, but it looks like a goat with the teeth of a wolf. She fears she is going mad. Her daughter is born, but again, dead and blue. She wouldn't let go of her baby, even after it started to smell. John has to force the baby from her arms. Eventually, a baby boy is born alive, and his name is Nicholas. Hermione finds John speaking to the ram, and she fears that they are damned. Hermione arranges for Nicholas to be secreted away. She flees to escape, but is she able to?
Rowan's story in 1851. Following the death of her father, 17-year-old Rowan arrives in remote Mill House in the Welsh Mountains to become the ward of Dr. Maudley. Arriving at the same time as the Irish siblings Emma and Seamus, they too are to become the wards of this unknown figure. Emma is brash, opinionated, and cares deeply for her brother Seamus, who is wheelchair-bound, quieter, and has a strange affinity for snakes, spiders, and scorpions. Millhouse is very well-appointed, but creepy and isolated. Mrs. Good, the housekeeper/cook, gives the house rules, and it's all pretty standard stuff. A curfew of 9 p.m, meals will be promptly served, and no wandering, as the house is not kind in darkness. Rowan hears a whisper.
The mountain is not kind in darkness.
At breakfast the next morning, the bread is stale, the meat unidentifiable, and a large, strained beast with horns watches Rowan. No one else sees it.
This is all fine and normal and great.
Welcome to the Welsh Mountains.
Fine.
Gosh, God.
During a vicious storm, we meet other household staff. Andrew, a self-professed nobody. Jenny, a skittish maid, a mountain man previously thought to be a wild hermit, Rapley, who is actually the adopted son of Dr. Maudley, and then Dr. Maudley himself. We also learn that the house was built on Devil's Peak by John Smith, and people went missing during construction. So did babies. Then, rumors of the Lancaster witches abound, and John's wife, Hermione, was accused of witchcraft and burnt alive on that very mountain, cursing it and the house. I guess that she didn't get away.
No, this is all fine, normal architectural problems, isn't it?
Yes, all of this is great. Rowan explores the house and finds the library and is surprised to see that it is filled with books of the occult, most of which she knows and has already read. What? Fine, normal, good. All of it.
Did you not have that education?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay.
She has been schooled on the occult since she was a little girl by her father, who we find about in flashbacks, was cold and aggressive and dominating. The books in the Mill House Library speak of a monk, Faust, and his pact with the devil. We have one more guest of the house, a giant of a man named Cage, who arrives to educate young Seamus about Faust. Emma and Rowan would also like lessons, but Cage flatly refuses. Women can't be educated. What?
No.
It's not a
cloud thoughts. Become dangerous. And a blue stocking.
We'll be hysterical.
Oh my. Rowan is frustrated with pretty much everything going on in the house because nothing makes much sense, and she doesn't even really know why she was sent there. She keeps hearing hoof steps in the hallways at night and always seem to be coming for her. Rowan flees the house at night, sometimes out of the window, sometimes out of body. During one of the out-of-body jaunts, she is pulled back when a tree falls into Emma's room and onto Emma. At dinner the next evening, everyone is unnerved, lost in their own thoughts, and what is this meat? And then Rowan has disturbing dreams in which she is on the mountain speaking words of the corrupt and cursed, a language forbidden and wrong. She sees in the ripped earth all the occupants of Mill House in agony and writhing. She has had similar dreams before, but never so demonic. Bloody hell.
Kill had these dreams.
And in her panic, she rips at the wooden floor in an attempt to dispel it. She hears her father's voice. She is a witch, a sorceress. She should be burned alive.
Roan confronts Maudley, who drunkenly admits that she is here because she is special, so special. He tells her she has been educated enough and is the devil's plaything. Her father knew, and he knows, too, that she is a witch. He's too far into his cups to be coherent, and it seems like he's been memorizing and rehearsing all the things that he's talking to her about. The next morning, Maudley has disappeared, and searches of the house and grounds show no sign of him. When Roan joins the search, she enters the forbidden west wing and finds a chapel. In a room behind the altar are rows of dolls, a child's pianoforte, and animal heads, all with horns. It's such a nice, pleasant room. It's not full of nightmares at all. It's fun.
Oh, God.
She starts to notice little sigils hidden all over on picture frames on the walls, on the dolls' foreheads. Then she realizes she's been here before. No.
Do not like. Do not like.
No.
Negative. Put that in the nope bucket.
Nope.
Outside, it's storming more than ever, and the provisions are running low. Mrs. Good falls ill and then dies. Then Roan finds Seamus out of his wheelchair, unconscious. Instinctively, she runs for Rapley, because I've kind of got a thing going on. And he gave her a romantic spoon.
I love the romantic spoon.
You've never been given a romantic spoon? I haven't been given a romantic spoon.
Can I give you a romantic spoon?
I'm going to give you a romantic spoon.
Okay, let's give each other romantic spoons.
She casts sigils to find Rapley.
Witch!
Using astral projection to find what hurt Seamus, Roan sees a dark figure cutting her tether. When she comes back to her body, Cage is there and Rapley stared, accusing her of being wicked.
Witch! Witch!
Seamus is sick with convulsions. Roan starts seeing his ghost around the house, even though he's not dead yet. And now Emma falls ill, and Roan's offer of help is turned down by Cage, labelled witchcraft. That night, Seamus goes missing, and Emma screams,
"Witch! Witch, guys. Witch.
I think she might be a witch.
You think that she's a witch? I'm pretty sure that she's a witch.
I'm getting that impression.
Are you?
I'm getting that impression. Yes. Snippets.
Roan is tied up by Cage and tortured as a witch.
Witch!
He's being a total creep, too. So great. All of this is fantastic. So Cage is being a total creep, and he's dunking her in water to the point of almost drowning, and then he beats her, and then he reads scripture at her. All the while, Seamus's ghost watches on. Cage reads from a book in the devil's tongue, and Roan responds in kind, questioning how he should have such rudimentary knowledge of it, until he produces a branding iron. As he holds her down and burns her shoulder, Roan has a vision of a woman tied to a wooden post about to be burned as a witch. Roan's body rises into the air, Cage watching in horror, until his body is broken.
Witch!
Roan takes the cursed, unbound book and leaves through the window and flees into the mountain.
I love how we're turning this into a bit of a comedy now.
Did it? Well, it's so...
It's because it's a nerve-wracking book.
Yeah.
Anyway. Roan becomes ill from exposure and torture and is in a deep stupor. Rapley finds her and brings her to a camp on the mountain. When she is well enough, Roan looks through the unbound book and finds references to magic with snakes and spiders, which could lead to sickness and death. Has Seamus been conjuring? All signs point to yes. The book reveals that there are 6 types of conjures. Seamus is a soother with the way that the spiders, scorpions and snakes lie content with him. Signs point to Emma having a conjure, but what could it be? Roan hears whispers of Breaker, and she knows this is her conjure, which is the worst one of all. Suddenly, Rapley kisses her, and again, it's pretty hardcore. Roan realises she knew Rapley from childhood. They grew up together and can both conjure. They have sexy times and some more sexy times. After that, they talk about their childhood and Roan reads from the book. That is so romantic.
It is.
Rapley is certain his conjure is a sighter. He would see the ghosts as often as a child and most especially now.
Do you know, I wonder if when they were having their sexy times, if the romantic spoon was involved? Do you think it was there? Did they have the romantic spoon?
Maybe that's why you need the spoon. It's like the three seashells in Demolition Man.
You need a romantic spoon in the Welsh Mountains. You do. Oh, what do you do with those three seashells?
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. Until you just go and spout off curse words into the little thing and get all your little tickets and use that as your toilet paper.
The paper would be really rough, though. It reminds me of school. When I was little, like, you know, six-year-old little kind of thing, the toilet paper at school was basically tracing paper. And when we ran out of tracing paper, we would go and get the loo roll and use it as tracing paper. It was that bad. Ugh. I think schools do it on purpose so you don't go to the loo.
Yeah.
It's torture.
Yeah, it is. They find a cave in the mountain near their camp, and Roan enters alone and finds a room with candles scattered about, their flames guttering. Small pigeonholes line a wall, their papers now ash, except one foul scroll full of evil things. Written on human skin. You guessed it. It's a human skin scroll. On another wall, the devil script is written all over it. Radley arrives, and Roan translates the words, pointing out a signature, Faustus. The writings mention Faustus trying to bargain for time with people's souls, and he happens to mention some people by name, like Roan, Rapley, Emma, Seamus, and someone called Dylan.
Who's Dylan? Oh, I'd love to know.
Me too.
They investigate the other rooms in the mountain and find a peephole that looks into the room that Roan was supposed to stay in, but traded with Emma, the same room where the tree fell and hurt Emma. Eventually, they follow the stairs that come out a little way from Mill House. Cage is standing at the entrance, waiting for them.
Gasp!
He's supposed to be dead!
He's not! Witch!
Roan accuses Cage of being Faustus and Rapley attacks him. Emma and Jenny appear, shouting at them to stop. Cage reveals he is part of an order set up by the monks, who are Faustus's brethren, to stop him. They are called the Crucivigil. He also reveals he is Rapley's older half-brother on the mother's side, and his nephew.
What? Yikes! All of this.
It's a really, really bad game of, like, something. I don't know. Family matters.
Family feud.
Jerry Springer?
Yes.
It is not only he and Rapley, who are Faustus's bastards, Emma, Seamus, and Roan are too. Yuck, the twirly boy, and the like siblings. Ew. Faustus does this to breed the unclosed, the people who can conjure, and barter his own soul back. Roan is something more, though. She's the daughter of Satan, who was possessing Faustus at her conception. Dum dum dum.
Actually, Satan. This part of the book was just yikes.
The top notch dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, real life Satan.
Can't really call Satan daddy, can you? Hey, Dad. Can I borrow some pocket money?
No. Andrew has now gone missing. They begin to search the house, and Roan follows snakes on the floor and finds a false wall. Behind the wall is a replica of the grand hallway, every last detail replicated, but inverted. Ooh. This room creeps me the fuck out.
Justifiably.
Ugh. Emma sees rips everywhere and says they must not touch them, and, almost hysterical in her panic, runs off. The rips Emma sees are signs of death. Later, while everyone sleeps, Roan slips out through the kitchen to find the ram waiting for her. Oh, it's Daddy. Oh, hooray. She asks what he wants with her, and he obviously wants her, and tells her there are two other cursed lines and that Rapley will die on the mountain. When Emma, Cage, and Rapley awaken the next morning, they find Roan has disappeared, and Cage tells of his theory that Maudley is Faustus, that Roan has more than one conjure and is thus evil,
And
that the person who built Mill House was Faustus. Suddenly, Emma screams Seamus's name and sees a huge black rip in the world and knows that it was Seamus and that he's gone.
R.I.P. Seamus. Rapley, Cage and Emma search past the upside down room and find a dungeon in an underground cave and Faustus. He pulls his hood back to reveal that he is Andrew.
Yes! Shock!
And then they see Seamus strapped to the water wheel behind him. Emma is shrieking at the sight of Seamus strung up on the wheel, and he's being cut up and sewn back together, and his legs are missing. Andrew / Faustus reveals that he is hidden in plain sight. He is John Smith, the architect of Mill House, and is also their father, which we already knew because you. Emma demands to know where Morley is. And Faustus and Mitzi kind of never left, and they had to eat something after they'd finished feasting on his other ward, Dylan. That's why the meat was gross.
Oh, it was people. Ugh.
Faustus throws a screaming Emma away through a rip, which Faustus says leads to hell. Cage tries to attack Faustus and is thrown away too. Rapley reaches out to Rowan with his mind, and she uses her powers to take her directly to the underground cave, where she finds Faustus strapping Rapley to the water wheel. With Rowan distracting Faustus, Rapley is able to pull himself free. A fire is started, and Rowan and Rapley flee, but a hand reaches out, grabs Rapley, and they are both pulled into the flames. Rowan wakes later. Rapley is not there, but the ram is. Millhouse is empty, and she is changed into a creature of the dark. Also, she's pregnant.
Yeesh.
So many twists.
Oh my gosh. All right, now let's go to present day. Zoe is preparing for a trip she is desperate for, to find Millhouse and hopefully finally gain answers as to what happened to her father there. Her best friend Poulton will travel with her and help her investigate the property. She is caught working.
Witch!
By her mother at 3 a.m., who screams and shouts at her, accusations of her being just like her father fly. When Zoe works, she must pay with blood and honesty. She must spill her blood, and then she must not lie, especially about working. I was giving you time to shout, witch, that time.
That's too predictable.
Her father paid for his magic with memories. Small things at first, like, you know, forgetting that he ate or took a shower, until he eventually forgot Zoe, his wife, and, well, everything else.
When Zoe was 7, her dad went to Mill House, and it changed him. He lost his mind, and he was locked away. Now Zoe keeps seeing a dark, mangled shape at the foot of her bed, whispering, Mill House. So clearly, she needs to go there, right?
No! Just... No!
What do you not do when the dark figures at the bottom of your bed say?
No, no. Not good
life choices. Not good life choices.
Yeah. No.
She doesn't know much about Mill House. She knows it was owned by an institution, Morley Foundation, that appears not to exist. She knows her father's place of birth is listed as Mill House, but not by who. He is adopted. A Welsh newspaper refers to Rowan's wardship in 1851 and her death in 1852 at Methenwyn Mill House. Zoe theorises that Rowan could be her ancestor. After a huge argument with her mother, Zoe checks in on Facebook, saying she's off for a ghost hunt by herself and will document everything in pictures, videos and in a journal.
Zoe reaches Mill House and everything is preserved as if someone were still living there. Zoe is scared, and it's not until Poulton arrives with lots of sausages that they are able to start investigating, using a map that suddenly appears to have old occupants' names listed in their rooms. Jenny, Good, Seamus, Roan? Zoe is uneasy when they find a bedroom riddled with tiny crosses and markings, which Poulton can't see. Things get weird when Zoe's notebook goes missing and they realize that their generator and lights are being switched off in the middle of the night. Zoe accuses Poulton, which he resents.
Zoe goes into the study, which was previously locked, and finds some letters that Rowan left to her father, so she photographs them. Poulton seems as intrigued by the hunting room and its weapons as she is with those letters. Later, Zoe reports that her heirloom ring has disappeared and Poulton says the lights and generator were switched off. Again. He is convinced it's a person doing this, so he sets up some cameras to catch the culprit doing it during the night. They get smashed on cheap vodka and red wine, and when they wake the next day, there is a note in the ash of the fire that says, "Get out while you still can."
Zoe decides to work to reveal the entity. As she photographs some more of Roan's letters, a copper-haired girl appears wearing Zoe's heirloom ring on a chain. Her name is Len, and she admits to taking Zoe's things and leaving the message in the ash and reading her notebook. She says that Milhouse is her obsession, and she notes that it can attract the worst sorts of people. Len says she can't leave the house and confirms that there are ghosts there. She also says that people like her and Zoe don't need herbs and other such nonsense to work. It's in their blood, and that there is no price to pay for conjuring. Out of curiosity, Len urges Zoe to perform a conjure without blood payment and to lie after the conjure just to show her that she doesn't have to pay. Jeez, she was wrong. Zoe bleeds all over from every pore. Len begs her to never do that again, not lie, and never ever conjure. There seems to be some attraction building between these two after this. After you see your friend covered in blood from every pore, definitely fall in love with them.
Yeah, swipe right for that. I don't know if it's left or right to say yes or no. I just say directions.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Poulton has seemed to disappear into the house, haunting the hunting room. When he appears, he is bitter and hateful. Zoe and Len want to leave Milhouse, but Poulton won't, and so they try to leave without him. Naughty's try to leave. The mists roll in and Zoe falls. She wakes up later back in the house, and there is a massive piece of slate in her leg. To make matters worse, Poulton's state of mind is deteriorating quickly, and they run out of food.
To her camera, Zoe admits she regrets coming to Milhouse. They keep trying to leave, but can't. Poulton has changed and is obsessed with the hunting room. During a confrontation with Len, he plunges a dagger into her chest. Yikes. Which knits back together who the hell is she and what is going on. Witch!
Witch! Witch! Missed that one. Drop the ball there, Claire.
Their situation is desperate. So Zoe and Len do some research and decide they need to find the water wheel that they find mentioned in some of the old papers that they found. Before that, though, Zoe and Len have sexy times, and it's perfect timing. Poulton can be heard upstairs banging and crashing about, but when Zoe goes to talk with him, the hunting room is dark. The skulls are upside down, and the weapons have been removed. Poulton was not in the room, and they are unable to find him. They decide they must conjure that night and find the wheel.
They're led through the house, maybe through a false wall and upside down room, perhaps.
No!
To the water wheel, by a snake. It's that guy again!
Hey!
Hello, little dude. But Zoe slips into the sickening water and falls ill. Len conjures a fire.
Bitch!
To keep Zoe warm. And as she sleeps, Len covers the wheel in chalk sigils. When Zoe wakes, she sees Poulton in the ruins of the inverted hallway, emaciated and naked. They exit through a small staircase that takes them through the mountain, Len leading Poulton by dangling a snake in front of him. When they're out, Len lets loose the sigils and Zoe falls to the ground in agony. They make it back to the mill house. Poulton has been chained arm, head and feet to a piano. Zoe is still ill, but she's sure it will pass. She thinks it will pass. She loses all feeling in her legs. It won't pass.
Zoe is maudlin and sinking into depression. Of course, because she can't feel her legs and there's no food or water left. And Poulton is feral? Zoe questions Len about who she is, how old she is, and how long she's been at the Millhouse.
About bloody time.
Len admits to being at Millhouse for 5 years. Zoe sinks deeper into depression and regrets ever coming to Millhouse. Lynn says she can commune with the dead, so she offers to try and call the dark figure that Zoe used to see, the one calling her to Milhouse, as it might have answers.
They're doing this all in reverse, aren't they?
Well, they are. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lynn calls the dark figure, which appears as a young, beautiful woman wearing the same heirloom ring as Zoe does. Lynn translates for the spirit, who calls Zoe daughter. This spirit is Hermione Smith, who has been watching over her descendants. She is responsible for bringing Zoe and her dad to Mill House. She shows them a vision of herself when she was still alive, holding her son. They hear Hermione curse the boy and his line to never work the magic of his father, and if they do, they will suffer for it. She then gives the baby to a villager who takes him away. She sees her husband inside the cave with John Dee. Hermione accuses her husband of working with the devil. And he agrees.
Witch!
I mean, points for honesty, but jeebus.
Yikes.
The vision changes, and we see Hermione being beaten and tied to a stake. Slowly, over the course of hours, she is burnt to death, screaming all the while. Throughout all of this, Lynn has learned how to get out. They need to destroy the wheel on the astral plane.
Zoe learns how to nightwalk and projects herself to the astral wheel, which is still working, turning slowly. Covered in people straining, all the ghosts in the house were tethered to the wheel. Lynn speaks words to destroy the wheel, which brings Poulton back to himself. He's still tied up to the piano, but he remembers everything and feels pain and sickness. Zoe just lies there crying, as she is now quadriplegic. Lynn says they should take Zoe to her mother. Roan! Turns out, yikes, Lynn is the daughter of Roan and Rapley, born in 1852.
What?
Yikes! All of the yikes.
So many twists.
Woo!
I'm exhausted. That was a huge summary.
Oh, gosh, but we had three full stories to tell.
Oh, wow.
Yikes.
I think the audiobook was shorter. Jeeves.
I think it was. Man. So what's your favorite? Out of all of that, what's your favorite?
The cheap vodka and red wine drug scene with Zoe and Poulton.
Oh, that was very good.
It was just so funny. Because we've all been there and the joke was rubbish and had no point.
Oh, that joke. Oh, no.
I mean, I kind of get the fact that he was probably being fed somewhat the joke about the ram and the red eyes and stuff. But, like, yeah, we've all started that without a joke without a punchline, haven't we? It's too relatable.
Yeah, we have. And it ended so well with the goat being able to speak and it being a male goat being milked the whole time. And yikes.
It was just nasty.
Oh, it was so bad. Do we need to, like, ruin the punchline of the joke or the non-punchline?
If you don't get the milking of a male goat, then I'm not going to explain it to you. I'm sorry.
No.
Oh. What is this? Amateur hour?
Yes.
What about you?
I really liked all of Zoe's sections, especially in the book, because there were photos and drawings and things like that, which it's very good. There were times in the book where she was talking about how beautiful Lynn was, and so then there's like a picture of Lynn, or she wants to draw Lynn, and so then there's a drawing of Lynn. It's really cool. I like those
That's
parts.
That's excellent. That's because the Zoe bits were really well done, because like some of it was Facebook check-ins, some of it was video, some of it was journal writings. It's quite reminiscent of Miss Peregrine, actually, you know, enhancing the book with other medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool.
I love Steve West's audiobook sections, even though there's only like two or three of them. Because his voice is so dreamy, and I talked a little bit too much about how much I am in love with Steve West's voice back in the Strange the Dreamer episodes, but I can't help it because his voice is made of dreams. And he was Rapley, and he was the voice of Rapley in his, you know, couple of chapters. And it was so good.
His voice actually reminded me of somebody else, and I had to quickly check the names in case it was him doing it. Richard Armitage, the dude who was in The Hobbit.
Yeah, definitely not, but their voices do sound the same. I can hear that.
Yeah, I was like listening to it. Is it Richard Armitage? And then I quickly checked and I was like, no, it's not. I was like, ooh, still very lovely. Very lovely.
Yes.
That, I mean, to be fair, I mean, without it being a specific scene, but the narration, the ensemble narration was just chef's kiss. Beautiful.
Yes.
With the sound effects, with the blowing out of the candle and the eerie music and the whispers, and it was creepy. As I couldn't listen to it in the dark. I did try, and then I was like, nope. Nope.
This one did not scare me quite as much listening to it as the Dead House did, but it's just the same. The audio is perfect in every way. So much better than that last audiobook that we listened to.
I'm not talking about that ever again.
No.
I think the difference is it's less skittery. Like the clips that you played of the last audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 4, for those who would like to go back and have a check it out. There was a lot of skittering and kind of like creakiness and eeriness to it. Where this one, it was more that was more like jumpy horror, while this one was more like suspenseful
mm-hmm.
and really full of imagery. And it was like that kind of creepy. And it was kind of like, no, you know what? Actually, I don't need to have some old guy whispering my ear right now because it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I want to get to sleep, but I want to hear what's going to happen next. What are the dilemmas?
I really love both the book and the audiobook, because in the book there's so many things thrown in, and like, you know, they mention writing backwards and it's written backwards, the book is. But yeah. Then when you hear that in the audio, it's just like the audio is a little bit weird.
Roan E. Addington.
So you know that something weird is going on, and you're still getting something out of it, even though you can't see what's happening. You can't see the weird backwards writing and the handwriting, and things are small and creepy and whispery. Like, you get it in both ways. You can hear it in the audiobook. You can hear the whispery, creepy things. But you can see it in the book. It's actually there too. So it's like, it's really nice. If you don't have the book and you only have the audio, you're still getting this full, rich experience. And if you have the book and you're not listening to the audio, you can see all of the creepy stuff that's happening. So it's one of the things that I love the most about her books, is that everything is there, you know, whether you're reading it or listening to it. It's an amazing experience either way.
It's full on. It's like immersive, really, isn't it? And for a book to be able to do that, for the written word to be able to do that, very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to try and get a copy of the physical book now, because that's interesting. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Have you read her other? You haven't read her other books either, have you?
It is very difficult to be able to get Dawn Kurtagich books in my country. They are easier to get now, since we talked about doing Teeth in the Mist.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, right, I'll have a check. And I'm starting to see them, but the audiobook-wise, only Teeth in the Mist is available. And there are ebook versions now of the others that weren't there before, because when you did the Halloween special last year, and I was like, ooh, I'll check it out. I couldn't get them last year, which is strange because she is a fellow Brit.
Yes, she is. Well, perhaps I'll have to send you some things in the mail. Yes, so excited. Okay, so we talked about all of those great things.
Yes.
What do we not like? Anything? Because I love 100% everything about these books.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I wouldn't say I didn't like it, but like, I thought the most bits. Because there's no word for it. There's no word for it. It's just a sound effect. Well, there's probably three now I've thought about it a little bit more. Cage being absolute total lecherous creep while he was torturing Rowan. I mean, it wasn't just torturing her, you know, physically and mentally. He was going up to her and basically like, I thought he was going to rape her, if I'm perfectly honest.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I thought it was going to, you did as well, you got that vibe.
Yeah, I did.
And I was like, dude, do you know what? You basically drowning her and you're starving her. You've exposed her to the elements. You're reading scripture to her. Now you just want to make matters worse and get all freaky with her. Oh, no. Can you just step away? Step away.
Yikes. Yeah, that was definitely my least favorite and part too.
This like, I wouldn't say I still enjoyed it and I like the twists for it. I thought when Rapley and Cage were having a talk, when we were having a conversation, and it was when they were having a conversation about who Cage is and the Crucifixion and his lineage, because his father was actually a first generation of Faustus's bastards, so he is a diluted, hence why he's had limited devil's tongue, and he's like, yeah, I'm your half brother. I was like, ooh, dum dum dum. And then, yeah, by the way, you know, Uncle Rapley. Oh, come on.
That's just terrible.
That I think that was like one step I wasn't really needing to take at that point, because it was like more for the cheesiness than the actual anything else, like grossness. I was like, ah, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not bad enough that he's just had sex with his sister. I don't care if they only share one parent. That's still wrong. Don't do it. It's wrong. Which is the same kind of like with Zoe and Len. Why did it take so bloody long for Zoe to ask Len who the hell she is? How long she's been there? She says she's been trapped there for a while. And it's like, oh, okay. Do you want to have sex?
Of course I do, stranger.
I'm sorry. Some random strangers stealing my shit. Turning the lights off. Reading my personal notes.
It's totally
fine. Yeah, she's totally hot and that's forgivable. No, I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to say you needed to ask one or two questions at that point, love.
Yeah. Like, do you know anything else about her? Does she have a last name?
Yeah.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
How old is, who are your people, Len?
Nope, don't care.
I mean, just don't guess what all three of those parts.
But, you know, we couldn't have asked Lynn who her people were, because then we would know.
What would we find out? What would we find out in the last chapter? Exactly. Where we're taking Zoe? Oh, we've got my mum's house. Who's your mum? Rowan. What?
Yeah. Oh, hey, by the way, I was born in 1852 and I'm, you know, still apparently a young, hot dish. But, yeah. Yikes.
Yeah. It was just. And you had to have those reveals. So I get it. I totally get why it was done. But it was like,
couldn't you have asked her anything else? Anything.
Anything. Just anything. Yeah, just anything. Like, how long has she been there? What's she been doing for food and water? Because you start sharing your provisions with her, which is fine. You know, it's a nice, decent human thing to do. But no questions. I don't know. And Poulton was no good at that point because he was all big feral and possessed by demons.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway. Was there anything that kind of knocked you out of the story, or, you know, just thought, insert sound effect here.
There was one thing that did knock me out of the story completely. And it was toward the end. And like, I don't even remember what else is going on because it was just so like snapped out. But there's a bit from Poulton, and he has horns. And then you just go right back into, like, Zoe telling her story. And, like, going on, and, you know, they're going to go and destroy the water wheel. There's just this one bit, and it's like, hey, I'm Poulton, and I've got horns. All right, back to you. And then it's just right back, you know, to the rest of the story going on. I don't even know what was going on at that point. And why did we need to hear from Poulton with his horns? Is this the time when he's creeping around and they're dangling snakes at him?
No, This is future Poulton. This is Poulton when Zoe's, they're obviously at Rowan's house, and Zoe's unconscious, and Len's doing whatever she's doing, and Rowan's doing whatever demon Rowan's doing, and he's like, yeah, it's me, I'm Poulton, I'm fine now, I mean, I've got horns, but you know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Facebook check-in, Paulton, feeling horny.
No!
Not that kind. Not that kind.
No!
Get your mind out of the gutter.
Actually, literally, has horns.
Mm.
Good.
Mm.
It's all good. Good.
However, Paulton was my favourite character, I would say.
I did like Paulton, too. I really did.
Yeah.
I felt so bad for him, too, when they get drunk and he tells his terrible story and then he kisses Zoe and she's like, "Ooh, I'm gonna go over into your sleeping bag now because, ooh, don't kiss me." Yeah. And then she starts making out with Lynn the next day.
Yeah, but, I mean,
a couple days later.
Okay, yeah. I mean, he's smart ass. He's completely 100% supportive until the demons start taking over him. Supportive of his friend. You know, who can you name many people that you would drop everything for, pack a load of sausages and baked beans and a generator and some cameras and lights and haul your ass over to the Welsh mountains to go to an unknown, mysterious, remote house that nobody's ever heard of before? There's not many people you do that for.
Not many people.
And, you know, I think that's absolutely amazing. He's just, you know, he's just, Zoe is what she is. He reminds her at the beginning, you know, don't forget to pay your price for the Conjure.
Mm-hmm.
And his degeneration is so quick and so aggressive. And I'm like, constantly thinking, is he going to snap out? When is he going to die?
Yeah.
Is he ever going to snap out of this? And when he does snap out of this, what kind of state is he going to be left in? Honestly, I felt really, really sorry for him. And I think it's because we aren't, well, I am wearing a witch's hat.
Witch!
We're not witches. We can't conjure. He was probably the character you related most to.
Yeah. And is that why everything for him was so terrible? Because he's not open? He's just a regular guy?
Yeah, the cluster's unclosed, aren't they? The people in conjure. So he is closed.
Yeah, everyone else who is in Millhouse. Like,
everything is battering him. Literally, it's a battering ram. And yeah, I think I just feel for him. But he's such a smart, wise-ass character.
Yeah.
He's like, dude, why are you kissing your best friend? You're quite clearly gay. At least that's the vibe I got.
Too, and then so was she. Like, why? What are you thinking? Surely you know that your best friend doesn't like boys.
Or maybe it was the ghost of, or the spirit of Faust taking Paulton over at that point, and could you be. Know,
could have been, could have been.
Hmm. Yeah. So
You know, I really liked Rapley, but I think it was just because of Steve West and his.
You are literally gushing right now.
I know. I love him. I do. I'm sorry. And I commented about it on Twitter when I was reading it the first time, listening to it.
Oh, you were a Twitter creep.
I did. I just mentioned him. Like, hey, you know, I love this part of the book because it was because of Steve West. But he responded, so it was okay. I got to fangirl just a little bit.
Mr. West, if you're listening to this podcast right now, I'd like to say I hold no responsibility for the creepy woman that's currently parked outside your house, just pressing intercom, just to hear your voice.
I'm sorry, I'm not a real creep in real life.
You ain't convincing anyone that, love.
No, I'm not. I'm sorry, his voice is made of dreams.
He licks his lips. His breath quickens.
It is
you
nice.
You listened to the audiobook. You heard it.
And I agree. I totally agree. Well, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe you keep the whole Steve West voice and I'll have the Richard Armitage voice because it's very similar.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the world is still a good place.
Yes. Okay.
They can just talk. Just talk. They need to do apps. Those, like, calm apps with his voice. Mm. And, you know, when you're feeling really anxious and you just need to... You can just put them in your ears and all is well. Yeah. It could be cool. Steve West makes everything better.
It could
patent pending. That's my gift to you, Mr. West. My gift to you.
Yeah, I might be the only person who like pays for that, but it would be okay. But we should get it for free. Because it was your idea and I'm tagging along. I also like him because, you know, he's a pretty
good guy. Has a chiseled jaw and wears stubble nicely.
No, that... Well, I'm talking about Rapley, not Steve West.
So am I! Oh, am I?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh,
this is just... we've descended into madness.
We have. We have.
Are we in the Mill House?
I think we are in the Mill House. We're lost in the mist, either way.
It is a little misty where I am right now. It is very Halloween-y atmospheric, so, you know. Yes. Ooh, watch out, there's teeth.
Oh, teeth.
Or, I am the teeth of the mist.
Oh, you are the mist in the teeth.
I need to go and brush my teeth now because that's just hygienic.
Oh my gosh.
Well, you might like Rapley / Steve West. They've both merged in my hair to be the same person.
They're the same person, they are. Listen,
but I like Poulton. Ha! Take that, woman.
I like Poulton too.
I like drunk Poulton. I like crazy Poulton with horns. What's up with that?
Does he still have horns today?
Oh, but well, where is he? He's somewhere in the Welsh mountains with a vampire woman and her daughter.
Right.
Yeah.
Are they all... Okay, so... They go off and they find Roan at the end. Lynn's like, oh, let's go see my mother. And then you find out that it's Roan. And, you know, she's been alive for forever long. And they all have. So they go off to find Roan. And I wonder, when they find Roan, is she still going to be like
Roan?
A creepy monster? And also, is Poulton still going to have horns?
These questions need to be answered. And I hear rumor it might be a while before you find these answers.
Yes. Yes. Maybe Teeth 2 will happen, you know.
Maybe Teeth 2 will happen. And maybe Teeth 2 will not answer any of these questions, but add in lots, lots and lots more and make us even more confused and go, but horns!
But horns! Teeth and horns!
So the title Teeth in the Mist, so far, the mist doesn't have all that sharper teeth. Is it actually referencing Roan being the teeth in the mist in the end? She is, you know, all vampire-y, demonic creature.
Do you know that I thought it was the mountain? The mountain is rocky and pointy and scary.
But it's referred to as Devil's Peak, isn't it? Or they should say it should be Witch's Peak.
Which is teat.
Teat.
it's cold as a witch's teat. Well, I know. It's terrible. But that's just what I thought of it as. The mountain is scary and pointy and it's misty and there's these big jagged rock bits pointing up.
How dare you be so pointy?
Do not be pointy, nature. That's just what I thought of, though. But it could also be evil Roan.
Or it could just be an allegory, is that the right word, of danger and demonic forces and the evil that you can't see. When you're confused and you're in an unknown and unfamiliar place and situation. Or we could just be reading far too much into this.
Could be. You know, symbolism or literal things that are happening. It could be any of it. It could be all of it. It could be none of it. It could just be a really cool, creepy title for a book.
Yeah. Did any of the deaths or anything stand out for you as a surprise? Like, or was anything that, what was like, whoa, moment for you?
I mean, you know, the book is so surprising and twisty in every possible way anyway. There's not really much that you can say that you were actively surprised by because, like, it's just, it's full of surprises and it's full of twists. So you don't even know what to expect because that's just the kind of book that it is. But I know that I've already mentioned it, that I was just really thrown off by that time that Poulton had horns, because that part of the book, like, it was just a little part, like, in between everything else that was already going on. There was just this one chapter that pops up, not even a chapter, one little portion that pops up, and it's Poulton, and he's like, oh, hey, it's me, Poulton, and I have horns. And then it goes back to the rest of whatever's going on, and that just, like, I was just like, what is this? I don't understand.
Do you know what makes me wonder, though? You know how he was so attached to the hunting room?
Did he merge with the hunting room?
Yeah, because it describes specifically having the wall of horns. And I don't know if they were necessarily, I can't remember if they were, so not all of them were, must have been attached to skulls. So you kind of think, well, did he, yeah, merge with the hunting room and become that feral beast because of the room? Or were the horns from the room?
And like, he jammed them into his own skull because he was crazy? Them.
Yeah, or did he kind of like start wearing them because, like, you know, fancy hat? I don't know. I don't know. There's just so many possibilities the way that could have gone. I don't want to read too much into it, but you can't help but thinking, well, hang on, if I don't, I'm going to be surprised by the next twist.
Yeah. Oh
my gosh. Did you think about Andrew being Faust? Because that was probably, out of all the twists, that was the one that I was like, ooh, I like that one. Like the twist that stood out for me.
You know, it was set up that you would think that it's Maudley, and then you think that it's Cage. So it's already set up this way. And then that was, you know, that was a twist. That was a surprise with it being Andrew, because he was just barely there.
Yeah. I thought it couldn't be Maudley as much because it was set up too much to be Maudley.
Yeah.
It was like the obvious trap.
Yeah.
Almost.
Do you know something else that I was shocked about? Speaking of Cage.
Oh, what a dick.
I know, I hate him. But that Cage was, you know, he's a member of this Crucivigil, and he's coming in and he's spouting scripture at everyone. But then he's like, oh, and also I'm your half-brother and also I'm your nephew.
Whatever, dude. Whatever. I actually remember listening to that bit, and I remember thinking, I can't remember if I've said this already, so I'm going to say it again because it was icky. Like the Rappy Roan sex scene, I remember hearing it and going, ew, and messaging you and saying, God, they've just had sex and I've got a major incest vibe, and I just didn't hear anything back from you. And I'm like, okay, she's in bed, because we've got an 8-hour time difference, so, you know, I don't expect all the straight away conversation. And I'm like, right. And then I got it and I remember texting you going, oh my god, the brothers, the ick, and you're just like lolling and then, potentially even having a ruffle, I don't know. And then I remember getting to the Cage bit and going, they're all brothers and sisters, it's disgusting.
Yep.
And then getting to the Cage nephew bit, and I think I just messaged you and went, Cage is also the nephew. Oh, F off.
It was so hard for me to not, like, respond to you in those cases. Because, I mean, I read this book when it first came out, and then I read it again when we're getting ready to discuss it. And I'm like, oh my god, no, I remember when that happened when I read it at first. And I was like, ah! So I had to let you have that moment.
Yeah. But it's nice when you've already read a book or listened to a book and somebody else picks it up and they start messaging you those bits and pieces, because you're like, yes, you got it.
Oh.
It's almost like reliving it for the first time yourself. And it was just, yeah, I mean, as much as Cage is, like I said, he's a dick, I actually probably thought that was a jarring moment when it was like, yeah, Uncle Rapley, whatevs, dude.
Yeah.
You pushed it now.
Yeah. That was a lot.
It was funny. It wasn't shocking. It was funny.
Ah, gross.
It's all gross.
It is.
It's all gross. But we've quite clearly established that Don Kurtigich will go anywhere.
Yes.
As long as it has meaning to it. And yeah, it all did. It all did.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It's time. Is it time? It's time.
It's time. It's time. Yay!
Yeah! Woohoo! Woo-hoo! So, on social media, we asked you guys if you would rather pay for your workings or your magic with blood and truth or memories. And on Facebook, 83% of you said you'd rather pay with blood and honesty, while 17% said memories. Didn't really count Instagram, but all the comments and everything that we had said blood and honesty, so we'll pretend that it was 100% blood and honesty. And what was Twitter? Twitter was different this time.
Oh, Twitter had, get this, 3 votes.
Three votes.
It's witchcraft.
Wow.
And it is 100% blood and honesty.
Wow. 3 whole votes. That's so many votes.
It is. It's like 7 away from double figures.
Wow. Wow. So good. Well, Ashley said, one day we'll get there. Ashley said that she would rather pay with her memories. She says, I have a great deal of memories I don't want to keep. Magic can have them. Plus, bloodletting for myself, like blood withdrawals, make me pass out.
Casey said, memories, because I already always forget mundane things. So a bit more forgetting wouldn't hurt. Also, I hate blood. Oh, Casey, I relate.
Then from Instagram, EllieRose1057 said, I'd rather lose blood, too many memories I love. And what if I forgot the plot of one of my favorite books? Which I think would be a bonus.
Total advantage.
Yeah.
Total advantage. Imagine reading those books again and
It would be great. Mm. It would be great. There are so many books that I would like to read again for the first time.
You wouldn't remember reading them, so it'd be like, ooh, whole new world.
It would be fantastic. I think I would pay with memories just so I could do that.
Is that your answer then? You're gonna pay with memories?
I mean, knowing what happens in the rest of the book, I don't want to pay with either one. Can I just not use magic? Is that cheating? That's cheating.
No, you've got to use it a little bit first before you kind of like, you know what? I'm just going to cut off.
Okay, so if I have to use it just a little bit at first, and I could potentially forget the plot of one of my favorite books, I'm going to go memories.
Which book are you going to forget the plot of?
Well, I mean, obviously.
I don't know. Potter. You could be going for Lani Taylor.
So I can read it again, but that's true. Oh, could I forget? Oh, no. What if I forgot a Lainey Taylor book, most especially Strange the Dreamer or Muse of Nightmares, and then I forgot how much I love Steve West? What would happen then?
Oh my God, you would be a puddle off the floor. We would have to scrape you up and put you in a bucket. I would have to get the squeegees out. It would be wrong.
Oh, so maybe I should pay with blood and truth. It's not worth it. I don't know.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm changing my mind. I'm going to go with blood. I'm going to go with blood and truth. I know! What about you?
You see, I was thinking about this one. And I can't remember who I said this to, so I'm just going to say it again because I have conversations in my head all the time. So have you ever played The Sims?
Yes.
And you know when you send somebody into a room to get them to do something and then you're like, no, go do something else instead. Go and clean the oven or watch TV. You know, you change the action and they stand there and go, what's going on? That's me pretty much the constant state, which is why I can totally relate to Casey and her forgetting the mundane things. It's not just the mundane things. I feel like my issue would be it feels like a waste of blood. Can I pay with blood and honesty, but give the blood to a blood bank?
Because
I think we're also forgetting something here. Nobody's mentioned honesty. It's blood and honesty.
That's right.
I'm okay being honest. You know, reality is painful. Truth hurts. It just means that, you know, you're not getting the bullshit. You're just getting the truth. So yeah. I don't mind the honesty bit, but I feel like it's a bit of a waste of blood. So if I can give my blood to the blood bank, then I'll play with blood and honesty.
But then would you have to do your magic at the blood bank?
I'll just put it into bags or something. I don't know.
Catch it in like a Tupperware?
Yeah. And then you can close it with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. the patented Tupperware burp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dear Tupperware, if you would like to send us free Tupperware,
I do currently hate my Tupperware because nothing is the right size and it doesn't go into a box nicely and the lids don't match up. Okay. So yeah, I'll gladly accept some free Tupperware.
Excellent. Excellent. And we will use it to catch our blood and then everything will be fine.
Yeah, so it's magic. It's goodness.
Oh my gosh. Goodness, okay. what's our next question?
Would you rather see a ghost through a camera lens or with your own eye?
I think I'm going to go with my own eyes. Because if I see it through a camera, I mean, does that mean that it's been there the whole time anyway?
Possibly. Who can say? You need to have had the camera lens on it all the time.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with my own eyes. Because, you know, then maybe, like, maybe the ghost, like, you know, like Zoe's ghost at the end of her bed. And it turns out that it was just Hermione. And she was just like, hey, why don't you come to Millhouse?
Oh, if it was like, do you know what though? Hermione totally screwed her and her dad over and just kept saying Millhouse, Millhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. But either way, I think I'd like to see it the whole time anyway. What if it needs help? What if it needs help passing on?
Then you get some kind of sitcom on Netflix or something and, you know, 5 seasons of that in a wacky sidekick.
Yeah.
So yeah, that could be good.
Yeah, is that what you're going to say too then?
Yeah, but I've got like similar reasonings. I did a ghost hunt, like an overnight ghost hunt once. And we were it was in an old castle in Newcastle. And we were up in the gallery area of the banqueting hall and it was like the blackest of black. It was so pitch dark. Couldn't see a thing. And I started freaking out because I was like, I can't see anything. And if I want to see something, I can't see anything. So I constantly was taking pictures with the digital camera I had just so I could see something. And I think, honestly, if I had seen something, I would have defecated my pants and run screaming from the place. And considering a friend I was with at the time was quite heavily pregnant, that would have been really bad of me. And yeah. So the idea of having to wait to see it through a camera lens just freaks me out. So yeah, if I want to see it, I want to see it so that I can just tell it to go away. Please go away. I don't need to see you. I don't want to see you. You do not belong here. Be gone.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I love ghosty programs. I absolutely adore them. So yeah, I feel like I've thought about this one probably more than I should have over a long period of time.
It's good. It's good that you're thinking about them, though. Okay. Oh, next question.
Yeah.
Would you rather be Hermione, Ron, or Zoe? Well, there's a third option. There's three this time. Which one are you going to pick?
They all suck.
They are all slightly terrible in one way or
another. Yeah, I mean, one of them is a brotherfucker. The other one doesn't ask enough questions before any kind of sexual congress. Oh, I hate that phrase. And then the other one has a slow descent into madness. Brotherfucking aside, Rowan is the most... And I say powerful, but I don't mean like magic powerful. She is the most powerful out of all the females. And you can ask Colin and he will tell you if there's one thing I stand, it is a weak-willed woman. They piss me off. And as soon as that happens, I lose all empathy, all sympathy. I'm like, yes, I want the monsters to get you. I didn't want the monsters to get Rowan. So I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll go with Rowan because I think she's the most empowered out of a lot of them.
Okay, I like that answer. I mean, I know that you said that you're gonna pick her because she's the most powerful, but not with magic. Well, I'm gonna pick her because she is the most powerful with magic. So she's got all the conjures. She's a breaker. She can do all of the things. So she's clearly the most powerful. And also her father is Satan. So not that I really want to have Satan as my father, but it does make her very powerful. And you know what? Immortal also, apparently, because she's still alive forever later. So I'm gonna pick her. But I just wonder, would I be scary looking? Would I be scary looking Roan or regular looking Roan?
Guess we'll find out if and when Teeth 2 comes out.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm just going to go with Roan. Because I don't want to be Hermione. I don't want to be burned at the stake. And I don't want to be Zoe because I don't want to be quadriplegic.
Yeah. I don't want to be whiny little teenager that Zoe is. Roan and Zoe and Hermione, I'm sure we're all the same age. But Roan's the one that seems to be the most mature. Hermione goes through horrific stuff and Zoe's just like a teenager.
Yeah, she's kind of a brat.
Yeah, I couldn't be bothered with that.
Yeah.
Would you, little miss, rather be able to use Corda or Rapture then? If you are Rorn, which one of those? I know Rorn's Breaker. I get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you only had the choice between Corda or Rapture, which one would you choose? Do we need to give a summary of what these mean?
I think we do. Yeah, I think that could be helpful.
Okay, I've got it here if you want me to do it.
Yes, please.
So the Corda. Oh, should I give the funny thing? I don't know. Those who favour Gothel may ensnare the mind, immobilise the body, and prevent speech. Because of the quality of this conjure, it has been called the Puppet Master. And Rapture. Those who favour Rostar can make others burn for a kind word, starve for want of a kiss, bleed to prove themselves. The Rapture controls all passion, devotion, and desire.
Hmm. All right. I'm going to go Rapture because I feel like if I can control someone's passions and all of that, I feel like I'm controlling their mind, while Quarter feels more like a puppet master just controlling the body. And I feel like if I can control the mind, then I can also control the body. So I'm going to go with Rapture.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I need to post a warning about that for people.
You might.
Watch out, Amanda's going to control your passions.
Oh, passion.
Ooh. Watch out, ooh. Steve West. I am going to go with Gothel or the Corda.
Ooh.
Because the idea of being a puppet master, yeah, that floats my boat. I don't know. Yeah, I totally get where you get the whole passions, control and devotion and desire thing. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is essentially a puppet master. But yeah, I've kind of got this whole like Harryhausen kind of puppet thing going, creature going on my head. And I just think, yeah, I could like snap your fingers and just go, no, you're not doing that. Essentially, okay, I'm just going to boil it down to this. Essentially, okay. The Corda to me sounds like I'm using the Force.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wrong with this one. I want to be able to wave my fingers and say these aren't the droids you're looking for.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm going to go with Corda.
Okay. I can get behind your Star Wars references. I think that's reasonable and acceptable.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Okay. Oh, last question. And of course, we had to save. The best / worst.
Oh, God. I keep thinking about this question, and I don't know how much of a good people this makes us.
No, it really... It does not make us look good. Either way.
Dear listener, we considered putting this question, but then we thought, no. I think it reveals too much about people. Too much insight. We don't need to know that. Go on, then. Just say it. Get it done.
Would you rather?
No.
Nope. Would you rather eat a person or have sex with your half sibling?
Oh. God.
Oh, it's bad.
It's just fucked.
It's all way. Everything about it is terrible.
I think we need to consider, do you have a sibling?
Because I do have a sibling.
Yes, I have one too. And I love my brother. But No.
Yeah, well, I have a sister. So that's not for me.
No. Even if it was an imaginary half sibling, it's like, I'm sorry, but like,
No.
You see, for me, Hannibal Lecter, you know, okay. So he didn't exactly, you know, he wasn't on the right side of, you know, ethics and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But he could make you a really good steak and chips.
He could. And, you know, depending on what the steak is made of, you don't need to know as long as it's delicious.
Hey, if it's cooked properly... rendered down, has a lovely garlic butter with it. Could be delicious.
Could be.
I'm going to have to go with eat people. There's past precedent with that as well, you know, survival needs and all this.
Yeah.
And, you know, cannibalism feels like less of a taboo than, you know, brother fucking. can I say
Does it really?
I don't know. I feel like a garbage person right now. And also, I need to say, I'm sorry for swearing so much for this one, ma'am. I really am. But, you know, ew.
Ew.
Sometimes, yeah, ew. Sometimes the F-bomb gets dropped.
Sometimes it does.
Sometimes it does. And unfortunately, I like dropping it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, okay. I don't know what's less of a taboo, but I'm going to, you know, I'm going to eat a person.
You're not going to what?
I'm not going to go into the details of who it will be because that's just too much to don't ask.
Yeah, no, that's way too much. But yeah, I'm going to eat a person too, especially if I don't know that I'm eating a person.
Well, exactly. Who the hell was Dylan?
Yeah, who's that guy? Nobody knows. And it's not like I had to chop his head off.
So I'll eat a person, but I won't do the butchery.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how I am with everything else, too. I mean, I'll eat a hamburger, but I don't want to kill a cow.
Well, okay, that is fair. That is fair. You know, specialized meat aisle in the supermarket.
Yeah. And if it was eating a person or fucking your brother, I mean, obviously eating a person is the way to go.
Every time I look at that question, I just feel like there's far too much insight going on here.
It's interesting. It's an interesting question.
It's opened up a whole thing. Yeah, let's just move on.
Yes, I agree. Let's move on, shall we?
Please.
That's the end. That's the end of Would You Rather.
Oh, thank goodness.
That's good. So I will say that we had some technical difficulties with this episode, and we were supposed to have Don Kurtigich join us, and we actually did, and I even have a picture of it. I have proof, so it actually really did happen.
Yep.
However, we're cursed. This episode is cursed. Everything is cursed. So our audio files were corrupted, and we really don't have any proof that anything happened. But we did talk to her, and she was amazing.
It was so much fun.
And it was so much fun. It really was.
And I've been forsaken, so that was nice. You have a new soul sister.
Yeah, she said that I was her soul sister, guys, and that is amazing.
And you're both Slytherin and both Scorpions, so what am I? I'm the lunch meat. I'm the person you're eating.
Yeah. Claire is Dylan. And we don't know anything about Claire, and we don't care that we've had to eat her. No, that's not true, because I love Claire, and Claire, I'm not going to eat you, okay?
Thank you.
Welcome.
I'll take you off the list.
Okay. And I'm still going to give you a spoon.
I will give you my spoon.
Good.
We will give each other a spoon.
Very good. Very good. So so that's the end of Would You Rather, and we promised that it was much more entertaining before we had Don Kurtigich with us, but still, we're pretty entertaining ourselves, damn it. Right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Cute. I'm taking that. I'm taking that as a win.
Yes. All right. So, very good. Very, very good. Final thoughts. Life lessons? Final thoughts? All smooshed into one.
Yeah. Wow. Curiosity can be good thing, but don't go to remote houses in the Welsh mountains.
Agreed. Don't make a deal with the devil.
Yeah, that's probably a better one. There'll be some lovely B&Bs in the Welsh mountains, and I wouldn't want to miss out on those.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, but pacts with the devil, nope. Yeah, nixie on that one.
However, if you own a bed and breakfast in the Welsh mountains, and you would like to send fictional hangover there, we would greatly accept it, and we will record an episode in your bed and breakfast.
And you can partake in a Would You Rather game.
You could, yes. Yes, you definitely
could.
You don't
have to have read the book, but it can help.
It can help. It does make things a little bit better.
Yeah.
All right. I don't feel like like I've asked anyone for anything in this episode.
I think we did with...
Yeah, Steve West.
Yeah,
Steve West's app.
I'm sorry now.
Oh, I'm so glad it's not just me.
No, it really isn't. Okay.
All right, I think it's time for your segment. Oh.
My turn this week.
Yes.
Okay. Fanfare, please. Okay, I'm going to tell you that if you liked Teeth in the Mist, or as I keep saying, Mist in the Teeth, if you like Teeth in the Mist, check out anything by Tone Kurtage. Honestly, check it out. If you can get caught the audiobooks, brilliant, but her physical books are tactile, that you can't go wrong, so pick them up. So I'm going to refer you as well to the Fictional Hangover 2018 Halloween special on episode 4, and it covers two of Dawn's books, which is The Dead House and The Trees Crept In. Moving on from the lovely Mrs. Kurtigich, there's a book called His Hideous Heart, and it's 13 young adults' most celebrated authors reimagine the works of Edgar Allan Poe. And it's an anthology. I love an anthology. I absolutely adore them, because it's like a taster of what an author can give you without having to commit to an entire series. So you can have like a little dip in. And if you don't like one, you might like the other story, and you never know what you're going to find in them. They're absolutely fantastic. I have found many an author who I simply adore through an anthology. So I highly recommend it. And contributors include Fictional Hangover favourite Kendara Blake. And somebody who haven't actually tried yet, but I am interested, is an author called Rin Chepeco. I hope I've pronounced that name right. Who I'm also going to recommend a book called The Girl from the Well by Rin Chepeco. Okay, so I haven't actually read this book yet, but the synopsis from Kobo is, it's pitched as Dexter meets the Grudge, and it is a tale of Okiku, a lonely soul wandering the world for centuries, freeing the spirits of the murdered dead. Once a victim herself, she now takes the lives of killers with the vengeance they're due. But releasing innocent ghosts from their ethereal tethers does not bring Okiku peace. She drifts on. Such is her existence until she meets Tark. Evil writhes beneath the moody teen's skin, trapped by a series of intricate tattoos. While his neighbours fear him, Okiku knows the boy is not a monster. Tark needs to be freed from the malevolence that clings to him. There's just one problem. If the demon dies, so does its host.
Ooh.
Yeah, I thought that sounded quite interesting. So it's on my to-read list.
Yeah. Oh, that also kind of makes me think, just in a very small amount, of Kendara Blake's book, Anna Dressed in Blood. There's like, he's a boy and he's a ghost hunter, and he expels ghosts from houses until he meets Anna dressed in blood. And like, it's the same kind of thing. Like, it's a ghost, but then if you expel the ghost, then you get rid of the girl that you love. So kind of makes me think of that.
Definitely. Definitely. I'm getting that vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds really good though.
Yeah.
It's the end. This is the end. And.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Over. So even though this episode was fraught with technical issues, it really was one of my favorites. I think it was the best. Don't you think it was the best?
It really, really was fun to make. And I'm absolutely gutted we've been cursed.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's seasonal, but this is just gutting.
Yeah. But like, we had so much fun recording it. And especially because our conversation with Dawn, that really did happen. It really did happen. We're not lying about that. It was so great. And because Dawn is so great, she's offered to sign and give away a copy of Teeth in the Mist to one of you guys.
Ooh.
Ooh. To determine who that listener will be. We're going, oh gosh, we're evil.
Sorry, do we have to insert evil cackling now?
We're going to post our last would you rather question to social media. Would you rather eat a person or have sex with your half sibling? And get you guys to respond to it. Then we're going to choose the best response, and that person will get a signed copy of Teeth in the Mist. So catch that on our social media and make sure your answers are very, very clever. We like ridiculous comments.
You'd never have guessed from our responses.
Yeah.
Oh, does this make us bad people?
A little bit. But I think it's fine.
I like it. Dawn loved the question. She said it was her favourite one. I know we have no proof of this, but she honestly did, dear listeners, say it was her favourite one. She absolutely loved it. So, yeah. If Dawn approves, it's not.
Dawn approves. Yeah.
When does the competition close?
Next Wednesday, November 6th. My birthday!
And, excitingly, this is open to everyone. Everyone, all of our listeners, have a chance to win.
International, everyone can have a chance.
So exciting.
Oh, it is so exciting. Okay, so now really, that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I am Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss the second installment of The Custard Protocol, Imprudence, by Gail Carriger. Send us an email at fictionalhangover@gmail.com if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment, or if you have any books to recommend. Also, be sure to look out for the next Would You Rather poll on social media. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com. Follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. Also, a special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.
Farewell, diary, until I open your pages once more.